So as a reminder, we're talking with John Griner from Cat's Grain. Cat's Grain is located in Washington, Iowa. You can find a lot of information on their website.
Yeah.
Cat's Grain, K-A-T-S, grain.com. Yeah. So there's a comment out there that we hear quite a bit in that we have the world's greatest producers and sometimes the world's worst marketers when it comes to farmers. Mm-hmm. So maybe just like, what's John's basics for a guy to understand right now, maybe as he's, you know, if you were going to give somebody advice that was a new farmer that was, okay, this is how, just some things that you can do to really try to be better at marketing. Mm-hmm. Well, rather than just always dumping when you need cash, right?
Sure.
So maybe do you have anything that you'd pass along just on some...
Yeah, it doesn't have to be overly complicated. And this isn't to try to advertise, really isn't, but on our website, I post the latest supply and demand tables. And I think when it comes to marketing your commodity, you are a grain producer.
Yeah.
So your business, your job, is to understand your own fundamentals, right? To understand your market. It's like if you work at a factory, you understand you're supposed to be at work from this time to this time, and you understand what you're going to get paid. It's no different when you're a farmer, it's just a little different. Your hours aren't set, but your fundamentals are always changing. So, I mean, it's just kind of the biggest thing I would recommend is to know the supply and demand. We post those tables that the USDA comes out with once a month. Understand supply and demand. Understand what our carryouts are. Understand what our usage is. We have that on our website. I post the world supply and demand tables for corn and beans. I have the U.S. domestic supply and demand tables on there. You know, what our usages are for corn and beans, whether that be exports, soybean crush, feed usage, whatever. So getting a hold of that. We do offer Cat's Grain customers text message services where four times a day we'll text out what the markets are doing. It's not that you need to always be on the cutting edge of what the market's doing, but we do send out weekly export sales. You know if we're selling what the market expects. We do text out these USDA reports, you know, what the market's expecting versus what actually was reported. You can also access the NOAA, the National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day, 8 to 14 day forecast. Those models change once a day. Take a look at those. You know your seasonalities. I mean, obviously right now, cool and wet would be supportive or bullish the market. But yet, and you know, once we get into July, cool and wet would be absolutely bearish. I mean, have an idea what the weather forecasts are. Mm-hmm. You also have access to the drought monitor. Mm-hmm. Have an idea, you know, and then I also have access to maps on where the main, a map of the United States, where the corn acres are, where the soybean acres are. Then look at the drought monitor, see if those areas are dry or not. Are they forecasted to get rain? I mean, so there's a lot of simple tools that can all be accessed from our website. So just have an idea on the weather, where the key acres are, your supply and demand.
Sure.
And then just, you know, subscribe to our text.
Right.
And just to me, and then the market's going to tell you itself. And you have it. And I always tell people, know your bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
You know what your cost per bushel is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you're figuring new crop, plug in your APH. Most people carry crop insurance anyway, so plug in your 5-year APH. Know your input costs. Know your bottom line.
Yeah.
If you're at profitable levels and the market has come up, you need to be making an incremental sale. If the market goes down and you're below your cost of production, pull off.
Yeah. Right. Well, and see, so that's interesting on our conversations about marketing, and a lot of guys talking about grain prices for the most part are not very good. So, but treating it more of, okay, I need to pay a lot more attention so I can shop around. You know, it's kind of shopping around for sales too, just like you would shop around for food prices or whatever, you know, or like in the grocery store and you want to buy one that's cheaper, or you want to buy a specialty kind of one and you're willing to pay more for that. Same kind of thing for what we're trying to talk about now with selling too. That,
well, you want to sell at your best price. Usually that's one thing we buy for. I think we buy for four different hog producers here in Washington County, but also we have a lot of processor markets, export markets, ethanol markets, within a 60-mile radius. So you need to know what your best price is for you off the farm for the free. And that's basically the service we offer.
Right.
So you don't maybe have to do that shopping around.
Yeah.
So we know, you know, where your best market is.
Right.
So that's kind of what we do from a grain business. But it's just important to take advantage of market rallies when they're there. That's another service we do offer. I do text out when the markets are overbought, meaning when stochastics, when I get technical on here, it's a momentum indicator that tells you when the market's overbought. And that's just a mathematical indicator on the number of days we've had up over the last 14 trade days versus the last three. Anytime that number is over 80, it's in a sell signal or an overbought time that you should be looking at it strongly. So I do text that out if we're in an overbought situation. And that's just another good, hey, push.
It's time to tell, time to pull the trigger. Hey,
turn the light bulb on. It's time to look at some things.
So, yeah, okay. That's awesome.
Cool. So what about, so going in, we got farmers getting ready to plant their spring crop here. Do you think a lot of guys wait until after harvest or sell out of the field or wait to get the crop in the bin and make their marketing decisions? Do you think that this year would be a good year to think about forward contracting some of this crop that we'd be projecting out?
Mm-hmm.
What's your position on that?
Sure.
What's some advice to guys on that?
Well, you know, at $10 new crop beans, which is what we have, I definitely recommend being about 33% sold, a third sold, because I know those are profitable levels. When it comes to corn, I'm a little lighter than that. I'm okay with being 25% sold.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good place to be in here. I mean, we're looking at out of the field corn around 375 cash. It's a wider basis than what a lot of guys like, because December futures are at 411. But the only way to ever not sell into that basis is to build your own bin.
Right.
But 375 cash for October out of the field compared to 310 is what we've seen the last 3 years. It's a pretty big difference, especially if you can get 200 bushel corn, which most guys confidently can in these days. So.
If we ever get to plant it.
Yeah, yeah. Put the bin, you know, like December, January delivery. I mean, you're probably in that 385 area, 390. You know, compare that to a lot of guys to 340 this year, you know, out the last 4 or 5 months. So we're at a higher level, so I'm okay with being 25% sold. I just recommend owning half of those sales back with July calls.
Good.
Spend 10 cents,
sure.
10 to 15 cents. Get some kind of upside protection on just in case something happens on half of those sales. So that's where I'm at, Trent, recommending. I think this time of year, I wouldn't be much more than those.
Sure.
That's it. So I've got a question on how is that going to be influenced by ethanol? We haven't really talked about that yet.
Sure.
I know there's some things happening there, and I think there's some talk about that in China too. Maybe that's something that's going to be playing into this here going forward.
Yeah, right now the government mandates that refineries blend 10% ethanol into their fuel. That's a government mandate. They're forced to do it. They don't want to do it. So the only way we keep them doing it is by support from our executive branch. And so far, so good. However, it did leak out, I think, first of this week that some small refineries are being granted waivers by the EPA to not blend ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
There are 25 small refineries out here not blending ethanol, and that number was up from 12 a year ago. And the EPA is the only service, or the only agency under the government that makes those waivers. And it would be up to the executive branch to tell them either to quit granting these waivers or continue to allow them to do it. So that, in regards to ethanol, is not a good thing. Overall, we've used 5 billion bushels of ethanol per year for the last, I want to say, 10 years. That number has not really gone up.
Yeah.
Has not gone up. It's just held steady.
For sure.
So 5 billion bushels compared to, I think we last year raised around just shy of 14 billion bushel, right at 15 billion bushel. So we are using a third of our U.S. crop to ethanol, and currently the government is supporting that. And that's all I really have to say about ethanol.
Yeah.
They're currently supporting it.
Yeah. Right. And hopefully
it's a big deal. Yeah. We need them to continue to support it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is there a hot buy right now? I mean, I know we talked about corn. I know you feel strong about that, but just, and it doesn't even have to be something in the corn soybean market. I mean, what's something that's got you real excited right now as a long-term position?
I do like having a small long position right now going into corn. Check out my comments page. I think if we see a little break early next week because of a more friendlier planting forecast, I think you start to build a little bit of a long position in corn. I'm not going to call it a red hot buy because of the tariff threat. Again, we don't send any corn to China, but anytime you have financial markets acting the way they are, you got to have a little bit of respect for that. Hot buy. I know Trent's big into stock market. I'm never right on this. Trent, what should you buy?
Well, okay, so give you a little backstory here. You know, me and John were having a conversation last summer about Snapchat. You know, Snapchat is like, if you look around in the world today, everybody under the age of 18 is glued to Snapchat. Like,
right.
Yeah.
But the problem with Snapchat is it just seems like it can't generate any cash.
Right.
I mean, cash is terrible. So John at one point was saying, "Oh, you gotta buy. This is a no brainer. This is a buy." Are you softened on that?
I don't remember. Was that a month ago? I saw it.
Yeah.
Or was that a year ago?
Well, we played.
But anyway, it's come down a couple dollars, of $3 a share in the last couple weeks. But they did show that their first sign of light last quarter. I think I'm okay owning a little bit of Snapchat here, but I would probably put most of that money though in Facebook, because Facebook has just got tanked because of this data breach. I'll be honest with you, I don't know if anyone really knows or cares.
Right.
They know when they click accept on an app that they see everything on their phone.
Right.
So
it's all out there anyway. Yeah, people can get it if they want anyway.
Facebook is far from the only app that you have to give all permissions to.
Yeah.
And the company is a cash cow.
Yeah.
I think it's only trading at like 15% of earnings, or 15 times earnings right now, which is dirt cheap. It'd be one of the cheapest stocks on anyone that generates income. On the tech stocks, it would be like one of the cheapest by far.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to times or earnings, whatever ratio. So I like Facebook. I'll tell you what, one thing I do like, if we can get this China crap out of the way, I do like John Deere, because I do feel this. I do feel that the corn price is going to have to come up. I like John Deere. They have strong financials, strong dividends. Their assets grow strong every year. They're a solid American company. That'd be more of a safe bet, but
I think the one that just went public the other day was Spotify.
I didn't really pay much attention.
I think they just went public the other day. So
my 3-year-old has a Spotify account.
So. There you go.
Spotify's.
I love Spotify.
Music.
Yeah.
I mean, Apple's done a pretty good job of trying to
get
some of that, but like Spotify owns that space.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. Well, and like I said, so now they just went public, and I don't think they really, so like Facebook, they get all their money from advertising.
Right.
And there's more and more companies that are going to put money into that to advertise because there's 2 billion people on Facebook. But Spotify, it's monthly recurring revenue for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many subscribers they have. They have millions.
It's huge.
Crazy number. But it's like $10 a month to be on Spotify.
Yeah.
So that's just a recurring deal. I don't think that they sell a whole lot of ads into that. Maybe they do. I don't know. But when you're listening to Spotify, if you have a premium account, well, I guess they sell ads for their unpaid subscriptions for the free account. Yeah. So they would be making some money on ads there, but that's just recurring revenue going in all the time, you know, that's a subscription-based deal.
Right.
So I don't know how many more people there are to add to that.
Spotify.
I don't know I don't know where it's trading.
I know Facebook's just down, you know, it come down from what, 182 or something. It's down around the 160 mark right now, which I think lends some credibility to John's market.
Yeah.
You know, comments here too.
I want to go out and tell them and tell you to look at June or July hogs too.
Yeah. So John has been we're always filming live around here, so sometimes we get cameos in the background there. But John, you grew up in Washington on a farm. Mm-hmm. You know, your dad's still a hog farmer here, a grain farmer in town, outside of town. Why not the hog business?
I went to college for, I guess, just to get out of the house and get out of the farm. And I was young and liked to have fun. And decided to go run track, play football at Coe College. And I, growing up, we did it the hard way. Dad was Pharaoh to, they sold feeder pigs, I guess, but we did a lot of Pharaoh. We had 40 sows inside and a few more outside. And so we did the, castration and treating and catching pigs underneath the sow and letting them bark at you and bite at you and kicking them out. And it at the time, it was always tough going. That was in the early 90s, and it really went downhill from a market standpoint. And it was tough going, and Dad was always told me never be a farmer. And he didn't own hardly any ground anyway. They always rented. So it didn't make sense for me to, I didn't have land anyway. So when you don't own, parents don't own any farm ground anyway, and they're cash renting, it makes sense to go start a career, and so that's what I did.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm glad to be involved with agriculture.
Yeah, I'm back in the area. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So what's your thoughts on, there's a lot of talk right now, as we've been talking with Michael Ditto, and he was kind of at this crossroads of, going down that traditional agriculture road, and you're putting up one of these big hog sheds, and the cash flow, you used to be able to cash flow those things under 10 years pretty easily back when there was a big, obviously we live in the epicenter of hog country.
Right, huge, yeah.
What's your long-term outlook on a young farmer making that 15-year, investment before you can cash flow a hog building right
now? My brother would be the one to ask about that more, because he's actually in the middle of putting one up right now.
Okay.
A big thing he's got going for him, though, he's got our parents to give him the ground to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big thing. I think we all know that it's not feasible for someone out here with no financial backing to buy farm ground.
No.
I think we also realize that at current prices, it's not feasible for a young farmer to go out here and cash rent a bunch of row crop ground and buy machinery.
Sure.
It's not going to happen.
No, don't
pencil. So my advice to a young farmer would probably be, or someone that's wanting to farm, is I hope you have a parent or grandparent that's going to get you started, because otherwise you won't be having that conversation.
That's exactly where I am. So I bought 40 acres here last summer, right around the corner from my parents' farm. So, and that's the only way to make it work. One, a beginning farmer loan to help get the interest rate way down.
Right.
And having the equipment right there. There's no way that I could have been able to buy the ground and to get any kind of the equipment. It's not
feasible. Right. So.
But now, I think what we're getting into with that too is, okay, for me, buying a piece of farm ground, all my buddies my age, if you're going to buy ground, they're putting a hog building on it.
Sure.
Well, we don't have any other hogs. I don't live at the farm. I live a ways away, almost a half hour away. So I'm not there to do chores and that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to do other things with it. Research kind of stuff out there, looking at soil health, but interested in this, how do I find better markets to go into? Because paying off a really hefty loan on this ground, my land prices are super high.
Right.
It's just in my payment back to the bank.
Right. And so basically what you're saying, Mitchell, is you got to have an off the farm income.
Right.
And maybe that off the farm income is taking care of someone else's hogs.
Right.
So luckily we have that option here.
Tons.
Where you can be on the farm or get your own start, buy a smaller piece of ground and get your own building going. But you also need to have an off the farm income to support that. And that's great. And we have those opportunities here. It's just, but Mitchell's got some help, on the machinery side of it.
Right.
It sounds like that's a big deal. It just needs a little help in that.
I mean, the days of stepping out of the city and saying I'm going to be a farmer,
that's not going to happen unless you have direct family ties.
Right. Yeah. It's almost near impossible. Right.
So with that though, we've been talking a lot about, okay, specialty markets, that kind of stuff. What's your thoughts on that? On, as a farmer, I'm looking at, okay, trying to go into the market that we've been talking here the whole time, and trying to find the best price that I possibly can. what is your thoughts on, okay, I'm going to go into the organic market, or I'm going to use non-GMOs, or I'm going to try to do something like that. What's,
or just non-GMO premiums?
Like just premiums, yeah. How do we get...
Where are they looking?
So, okay, so I think first thing I'll say on that is we do have producers out here that raise non-GMO corn. Mm-hmm. It's not organic, okay? So there's organic, that need to be certified organic. We deal with some of the premiums on those through professional proteins. We actually write their checks. Let's just say corn's $3.50 a bushel. These organic farmers are probably getting $5.50 to $6, maybe $7 a bushel.
So you're still
certified. If you're certified organic, we're not dealing with it. They just don't have a grain dealer's license.
Yeah.
So we write the checks. So, but that's all we do.
Yeah.
I don't deal with buying organic or certifying organic. I don't even know a whole lot about it. I just know that the price per bushel you get for it, but basically
pretty awesome. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I know about organic.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to non-GMO, you don't have to be quote certified to grow non-GMO. You just have to plant a non-GMO seed. Okay.
Yeah.
Those premiums for the 2018 crop are around 60 cents a bushel, but they got to be 99% pure. That's getting more and more difficult to obtain, but you can do it.
Yeah.
There's some hassles with raising non-GMO corn.
Sure.
You have to sell it to only one place because you're under contract. But the second thing is they only take it for 10-day windows, six times a year.
Right.
So no matter what you're doing that time of year, it could be in the middle of planting, it could be in the middle of harvest.
Gotta go.
Guess what you're doing? You're delivering corn. So that's kind of a hassle. The facility locally here that pays that premium for non-GMO corn, not the friendliest place to get around. So there's some hassles with it.
Yeah.
There's a sliding scale now too.
Yeah. It's, if it's 98% pure, you get 40 cents. If it's 97% pure, you get 20 cents. If it's under 97, you get no premium.
Sure.
So when it comes to especially corn markets, that's all I can really tell you. I did have a pork producer come to me, ask me if we could source in non-GMO corn because he's thinking about raising non-GMO fed hogs.
Yeah.
Because even just, not necessarily even organic, even just slapping that non-GMO fed sticker on
something,
he gets a big, that product gets a premium out in California.
Right.
And I can sit here, I don't know a lot about it, but I'm sure the demand for non-GMO anything is growing.
Do you see that as a fad, or you see that as a continued...
I don't see it going away because the research is already out there disproving that, that GMOs lead to cancer and all this stuff. But on the same side, I don't see it going away because I don't see that side.
That mentality changing.
I don't see that consumer going away anytime soon unless we see a major, like a depression or something.
Yeah.
Like the Great Depression happening again, which, hopefully we never see that again. But if it comes to the point where people ever are hungry again or needing
they're going to go for the cheapest.
As long as people have disposable income and they can make that decision, then I think that market will exist.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so being able to tie into some of these local markets and sourcing guys for kind of specific niches and stuff, I think is kind of what we're going for. So, what does the development of that stuff look like? Like you're saying, so raising pork or corn or soybeans that is non-GMO, or that's even like the pasture fed kind of side, or just sustainably sourced or grown with cover crops. I know it's one that like ADM is looking at and that kind of stuff. Like, what is your view of the development of some of those kind of more specialty markets look like?
Well, and you brought up the idea that, if you're feeding hogs and you're feed mill or pork producer and you're buying corn, it would be, is it worth more to have a higher protein corn?
Right.
Maybe especially a higher quality, like maybe a higher test weight.
Yeah.
Something of that nature. And sadly, at this time, we don't really have that premium out there for that. It's a nice thought, but bottom line, when it comes down to it, the farmer, when he grows his corn, so say he's growing number two yellow, GMO corn, which is the majority of it, when he when he's raising the crop, he doesn't know if his corn in this area especially is going to go to a hog producer, a processor,
right,
ethanol, an export. He doesn't know where his corn's going to go. And in the when the smoke clears at the end of the day, it's number two yellow.
Right?
Yeah. Okay, and everyone's got the same rate. If you're over 15% moisture, you're going to get a discount. If you're under 56-pound test weight, you're going to get a discount. Sadly, it doesn't work the other way. That if you're over 60-pound test weight, you're going to get a premium. The market itself just isn't set up for that.
Yeah.
Now, if it would, okay, you know, do I rule out that's, you know, maybe pork producers could line it up, like maybe it is an individual grower basis?
Right, direct, yes.
You know, or even maybe offer that, say, hey, if you're over this high of protein, we're going to test it. If you're over 60-pound, you know, we're going to test it. We're going to give you an extra nickel or 10 cents a bushel or 20 cents a bushel, whatever that value is. I would never rule that out.
Yeah,
I've never heard of it. And another thing that, you know, that problem is what if you contract that corn and it's under those grades? Mm-hmm. You know, does that go against your contract? Does it not? Now all of a sudden, let's just say it doesn't go against your contract. Does it still get dumped? Do you still get paid for? You know, there's a lot of problems with that.
Well, I hypothetically think it would work something like non-GMO. Sorry. Like you either meet the
criteria or you don't. Right. So you're either,
it's gotta be cut.
There's already specialty markets for organic, non-GMO, or regular. Set up, and at this time, that's all I really ever foresee happening.
Yeah. Unless they, you know, and if even if it does, it's going to be pushed from either. It's got to be such a big push. Like right now, we talk about this push from the urban areas, but it's so small. What it does is it does offer opportunities for individual farmers to take a direct marketing approach, you know, in their own practices to try and capture some premium.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But as far as from what John's talking about, the world market.
Well, and it would have to be kind of like we were saying that you have this one specific grower that comes and says, hey, I want this quality standard. Then you source it to, you know, one or a half a dozen farmers that say, hey, I'm your guy. Let's lock in a contract that we can make work for both of us and have some of those direct streamline, I think, together. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we've been talking about, you know, on how would somebody even go about doing that? And with the internet, those things can happen.
Sure.
So, John, is there anything right now, like in your personal life, that you're just, as we kind of leave with, is there something that, like, you're really into or really consuming a lot of or super stoked about? Anything that you'd like to share just about a passion of yours right now?
Well, I guess passion. I guess I have a passion for what I do, markets. I tried my best to give people good advice.
Sure.
And other than being a good, I have two young kids, a 3.5 and 1.5 year old boy. Wife's due in July with a girl. So I have, obviously I have a passion for being a good father, a good husband, passion for what I do from a work standpoint, passion for enjoying myself and the family outside of work. We'd like to do a lot of outdoors, a lot of camping, fishing, that type of things. We have a Polaris Ranger. We live in my mom and dad do own some timber ground now and some CRP, nice pond, and so we have the resources to do a lot of that, and my boy has just eaten it up. So those were truly my passions. I would just say one thing, Trent, though, is like a lot of, it seems like our age group, you know, there's a lot of us having kids and getting married, and everyone's kind of getting their own profession and getting their their feet.
Yeah.
They're getting settled in, I guess, for life. A couple things I've run into. I've been asked, you should buy a life insurance policy on your kids. Mm-hmm. And my answer to that is why. If God forbid, we ever lose a child, how am I going to lose income on that?
Yeah.
Just be careful for people selling you things you don't need.
Right, sure.
So that immediately is just, you know, there's a lot of, and I don't run around under the bus, but just be careful not to be spending money you don't need to be spending it on.
Yeah.
Instead of buying a life insurance policy on your children, because you're not going to lose income, and that's ultimately the purpose of insurance.
Right.
there are things that we've invested in, College Savings Iowa. Yep. It's actually a tax deduction off your state income tax. I don't know the exact percentage, but you're allowed to I think, put in $3,300 per child, per parent a year, and then you can invest that into a mutual fund that earns, you know, hopefully earns good money over the long run until they decide to go to any college.
And it's a well-managed fund. I'm trying to remember who the manager is. We just started this with my wife.
I don't either, but it's like Vanguard.
Vanguard.
There's a very, you know, you can put it in aggressive or moderate or safe or whatever. And so those are things you should be putting money into instead of those types of things. And then obviously people our age are going to get hit up, hey, you know, you need to get more life insurance and all this stuff. Well, that's fine, but just don't do whole life policies.
Yeah.
Because after you reach a certain age, you don't need life insurance anymore. Your kids aren't dependent on you. Your wife's not as dependent on you. They're extremely expensive.
Right.
You know, they're gonna sell you on cash value. Well, take that cash and invest it on a down payment on a farm or a house or whatever, or, you know, invest more in your own retirement. You know, term was always something that's cheap and makes more sense.
Yeah.
So, and I'm dealing with a grandparent right now that paid on whole life, his whole life, even bought long-term care insurance, and then unless you're on your deathbed, that you don't qualify for it.
Right.
It's just terrible.
Yeah.
So just make smart, simple decisions.
Yeah.
Don't be insurance rich and invest in the future, I guess.
Right.
So. Yeah, that's great. So we've been talking with John Grinder, Cats
Grading. Yeah, that's been awesome.
I'm going to see if we can get some CEU credits for this.
Yeah.
Listening,
because I need like some college credit.
Yeah, I got a degree there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
You can look John up. John, what's the best way to contact you? We love the website again, Cats Grain, KATSGrain.com, located in Washington, Iowa. Email or?
Yeah, we got phone number on there, email. It's john@catsgrain.com. Pretty simple.
And we're working on John to get a Twitter.
Yeah, John's going to get on the Twitter.
I'm going to get a cash on Twitter.
So, oh man, we're going to be tweeting about hashtag China.
Yep.
It's going to be awesome.
We're going to upload his website to our Facebook page. Make sure you check it out there. Leave us some comments. Send us some messages. And we'll try and pass those on to John, anything that you have. And he can find us on Facebook too and they can interact.
Yeah, we'll definitely have. So, we talked about getting John back on again in the future for sure. So it's definitely going to happen. We'll have to see. How the response is from everyone. Let us know what you thought, and we'll go from there. So we got to give the people what they want. So.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.